Don't upset. Oh no, I'm gonna forget his name. It's a sweet toffee.
Yes, toffee.
Toffee. Yes. I know it's a sweet.
This is Toffee, everyone. Oh. He was under my arm for this whole debate, in which I was talking about why dogs are annoying. But it's okay. He was asleep.
Oh, the cruel irony! If only he could understand you.
If anyone else, like Jack, is feeling tense about modern events, feel free to examine Toffee's delightful face.
Look at this. Oh, look at that doggy.
What a cute face that dog has. He's having a little snooze.
The cute face in the cone of shame. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful, Yahtzee. Well, all right.
Well, that's less cute, but well. You have to stop him licking his absence of balls.
Well, let's get on to non-player characters and their tendency to be annoying. I know you and I went down a list. Top on the list was like Ashley from Resident Evil 4.
Yes. But that's an interesting paradox, because Ashley was undeniably annoying, the way she'd keep yelling your name. Mm-hmm. Help! Leon! Help! Leon! Stop being axed by murderers over there and come help my helpless ass.
Mm-hmm.
But strangely, the sidekick character in the next Resident Evil 5, was somehow more annoying than Ashley. And that character was supposed to be like a full-on partner. They had their own guns and their own equipment, and they were all joining in with the combat and stuff. And the reason why they were more annoying is that when you're playing single-player Resident Evil 4, you can stick Ashley in a bin at certain moments and not have to worry about her. Well, and the problem with, what's her name, Sheva, I think her name was, in Resident Evil 5, was that she kept using the fuck out of all my health items when I didn't want her to.
Significantly more annoying. And I always felt like Ashley was righteously annoying. Like, you know, she's a teenage girl. She is useless in general.
Yeah, that was like her annoyingness was part of the adversity and challenge of the game.
Yes.
It's like, you are a lone agent sent to rescue this piece of fluff from a mortal situation.
Yeah.
And
no, and
she
is
going to be absolutely zero help throughout the entire time.
Which I feel like is very accurate to her character. Yes, like the president's daughter would be useless in this situation.
That was why Sheva was more annoying, because you were supposed to like her. From the game's perspective, you were supposed to like her and rely upon her. Meanwhile, I lose like 2 health points and see her sprinting towards me with a full heal first aid kit. And I'd be running away with more fear than I ever fled from any other monster in that game.
Yes, I am absolutely with you. Which, like, to me, this is like the crux of the question here is what makes a good NPC and what makes a good NPC go to the dark side of annoying? You know, what are the triggers?
See, this has been a question for a long time. And before I played like Resident Evil 4 and 5, I would have said the way to make an NPC not annoying is to make them at least helpful to gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get some examples. The sidekicks from Daikatana, very annoying NPCs, because you're supposed to rely on them and they're completely helpless. You'll get to the end of the level and the level will say, you can't continue without your 2 friends.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll look back and then you'll have to trace back through the level to find the piece of geometry they've gotten caught on or something. But then in contrast, you have games like Half-Life 2, where you hang around with Alex a lot, who is never annoying as an NPC, because she's actually helpful in combat, and she doesn't need you to untangle her from geometry, because she's actually well-programmed.
Yeah,
and
she
occasionally provides light story moments for you to enjoy.
Absolutely. I think we can look to something, you know, and obviously we use this example a lot. I'm not going to apologize. Something like Stardew Valley, where cultivating those relationships is, one, part of the gameplay, and two, has benefits, giving you recipes, giving you romance options, giving you more story.
Yeah, you get a benefit from befriending characters in that you some of them send you recipes, but that's not much of a benefit. Certainly doesn't really outweigh the effort that goes into befriending some characters. Just getting a fucking recipe in your mailbox now and then that you could have gotten from the TV.
I think
in Stardew Valley it's a completionist thing. You want to make friends with all the neighbors because there's like clear quantifiable numbers showing who's your friend and who isn't. And obviously you want the most friends.
Well, you know, obviously, and you know, the gameplay of Stardew Valley being as wibbly wobbly as it is, maybe that wasn't the best example. Very recently, I've been playing a ton of Dark Souls 3.
Ooh, that's funny, because I've been playing a ton of the Demon Souls remake on my new PS5.
You lucky duck, you got a PS5.
I'm a lucky, very annoying duck. I promised myself I wouldn't gloat, because I remembered how it felt before I had one.
We won't take that as a gloat, more just an accomplishment. I know you were trying to get one for quite some time.
Well, it was more Nick's accomplishment, credit where it's due.
Thanks, Nick.
We had to deal with like the audience to find someone who could volunteer to send us one.
We appreciate that, Nick. Well, I'll appreciate it if Nick can find me one next.
Yes, I appreciate you now, Nick. Now you have to work on Jack appreciating you. But anyway.
Well, in any case, what I was saying is in Dark Souls 3, there is a wonderful friendship side quest that culminates in a useful ability, which is that of Onion Bro. You know, not original Onion Bro, I don't believe. I don't believe he's the original Sigmund.
No, original Onion Bro, I think, would it be too much of a spoiler to say that he dies in that game? Whatever you do.
I mean, everybody dies, right? Everybody dies all the time. Especially
characters who are like friendly NPCs in From Software games. Almost all of them are dead by the end of the game.
It's true.
That's part of the effectiveness of Dark Souls, you know? You meet all these friends, and you're together around the campfire discussing this dying world we're in. And then the fact that they get picked off one by one by circumstance just further illustrates the decay of the world around you.
It's true. It's true. But and I suppose like even thinking about other NPCs, you know, like going through their dialogue, making sure you talk to them as much as you can unlocks useful benefits, whether it be just with simple like emotes that you can get or letting you buy stuff from them. But the Knight of Katarina in Dark Souls 3, if you go through his entire friendship side quest, you have to find his armor for him. You have to, you know, help him with soup. I forget. You just have to find him and talk to him in a bunch of different locations. Eventually, if you do all of that, he will come and fight the giant with you. And it's not a spirit where you have to be embered and you summon him. He just shows up in an epic cutscene, and I wasn't expecting that in my first playthrough. And he showed up and I was like, I did it. I got Onion Bro to fight with me. And that was like a little friendship quest that had a very satisfying conclusion.
That is a good NPC, but it's an interesting you bring it up. It's interesting you bring it up because while that's undoubtedly a wholesome story about an NPC in Dark Souls 3, if you recount his story in Dark Souls 1, at every turn it sounds like he should be an annoying character.
Yes.
I mean, when you think about it, where do you meet him? You meet him like outside Sen's Fortress,
right?
Where he's just sort of like waiting for someone else to open the door for him because he can't be asked.
Can't figure this out.
And then every time you meet him in the game, it's basically he's like being useless and you have to bail him out in some way.
Yes.
And then the final encounter with him, spoiler alert, you meet him in like the demon ruins far underground. And he said, you've helped me out so many times, I'm going to have to return the favor now because it's part of my knightly honor, part of my code of chivalry. So he immediately hurls himself into a battle with several enemies that outclass him.
Yes.
And you've got to go and save his dumb ass if you want to get the best possible ending. Actually, it's really annoying because if you just like do all the work and save his ass, he realizes he's still dishonored. and he kills himself. If you don't save him, then he gets killed by the monsters, obviously. So you have to sort of find a balance. You have to let him do some of the work, but make sure he doesn't die.
Right.
And even if you do, that and he doesn't kill himself, you find his corpse later on because he dies anyway.
Yeah, but you can, if you get the balance right, you can reunite him with his daughter.
Yeah, and then his daughter kills him because he goes hollow. That's how he dies at the end.
Right, but there is a bit of a satisfaction in their reunion. You get a little bit of wholesomeness.
Well, you don't even see them meet again. You just find her and his corpse lying there.
Just in your head, you get a little bit of wholesomeness.
Right, in your head, you can imagine them meeting.
But
as I say, all of those ingredients sound like it should be an annoying character, but he's one of the most beloved characters.
Mm-hmm.
That's partly why he came back in Dark Souls 3, I assume. Because what was Dark Souls 3 if not a great big, hey, remember how good Dark Souls 1 was, circle jerk?
Absolutely. And I'm okay with that. But you're right. He's useless. He has what should be annoying lines. You know, his always questioning, Perhaps for Onion Bro in particular, Dark Souls being such a dour, dreary game, literally anyone who can offer you a little ray of sunshine gets that honor. Same with Sunbro.
Yeah, I noticed saying the phrase a little ray of sunshine reminded you of him there.
But, you know, like these are characters who offer you a little bit of levity in such a dour place.
And I think we might be closing in on some kind of answer to the question of what makes an NPC not annoying.
Ooh.
And part of it is that they fulfill their intended purpose, intended by the developer.
Okay.
Like, as we say, Ashley is annoying, but she's supposed to be. Part of the whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
And Sheva is annoying in Resident Evil 5 because the developers genuinely wanted you to like them.
I think intention
is a big part of this.
Ooh, I like that.
Onion Bro is supposed to seem like helpless and doddering in the first game. And because he effectively brings that across, makes him not annoying as an NPC.
Absolutely. And you get your final catharsis when you see a Knight of Katarina actually kicking ass in Dark Souls 3.
Well, not before time.
Well, you know, a lot of build up. Yeah. But I wonder how that would relate to, you know, like looking at our list now.
Shall we go down our list of annoying characters?
Well, top
of the list, which a lot of people were probably expecting probably thought of when we mentioned annoying characters in games, Navi from Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Hey, listen.
Yeah, which goes along with my current theory, because the developers of that game intend you to like and consider them helpful, because they're your constant companion and tutorial person.
Mm-hmm. But they are also, Navi is also a bit of an exposition dump. And so you have to listen to Navi a lot when you don't necessarily want to.
Oh, you know who was even worse for that? Was your sidekick in Zelda Skyward Sword. Where
I remember that
it was even worse. Every five steps they'd come out and like they'd long and skippable dialogue for what you're supposed to do next.
Oh.
And that character was like supposed to be like this computer voice, so they'd use spurious rigor. There is a 90% chance that you must now proceed to the next dungeon.
Right. And so that's a tough, like, exposition dump is a tough burden that someone needs to bear in a lot of, I mean, not just video games and movies and books and everything. But to give that to someone who just says, hey, listen, hey,
yeah.
Hey, ugh.
Being unskippable probably doesn't help. So what would you do to make a character like that not annoying? Instead of like stopping you dead and jumping out and going, hey, listen, dumb twat. What if it was gentler? What if they didn't pause the game and like they just sort of gently appear out from behind your head and say, excuse me, just a sec, just one thing.
If you could just, I swear this will be really quick. This is the bad part of the game. We all know this is the bad part of the game.
And I just scroll the text along with the player still able to move around.
I feel like that just kind of puts a band-aid on the problem, because really the problem with Navi or any character like that is it stops the game.
Yes.
And even if you're still able to move around, you want to pay attention to what they have, and it still stops the game. And so it's the problem with tutorializing in general.
Have I mentioned that one of my current pet hates for video games is where they have audio logs to like build backstory and stuff, but you can't listen to them while playing the game.
I remember you have to go to a menu. Yeah.
You have to go to a menu and turn on the audio log and sit there like a lemon listening to it without navigating away. Right. I hate that because I want to be playing the game.
Hold on. Toffee has some things to add to this conversation.
Toffee wants to scrape his plastic cone against the mic and be very annoying.
Speaking of annoying NPCs, yeah. Toffee getting in on it.
Speaking of annoying dogs.
Well, but I think like that's, like you said, if it all goes down to intention, right?
Mm.
Which is like Navi is serving her purpose as like the tutorial, basically, but it's not implemented in a natural way where I know someone I put on the list here as annoying is like the Crestfallen Warrior from Dark Souls and Shanolotte from Dark Souls 2. And I think
remind me who Shanolotte is.
She's the person by the fire who you level up with.
Oh, the Emerald Herald.
Yes.
Seek, lest.
Seek. And I would put like the fire shrine maiden in from Dark Souls 3 in on this as well, because you have to talk to them so often that they just keep repeating the same thing. You say, listen, I have one purpose here. Seek, fire, sorry.
Yes. Yes. And so that's another thing is, at that point, the repetition sort of breaks immersion, doesn't it? They lose humanity at that point.
Yes.
Not in the Dark Souls sense. I mean, they don't feel like a human being. They're just robotically repeating the same lines. Feels more like interacting with a system than with a character.
Right. And, you know, Navi, we got to that point with Navi really quick because she was so annoying, where all we were doing is going like, yes, I know how to do this, Navi. And so that was the unintended consequence, is the break of immersion.
I reckon you could probably do any game tutorial without dialogue. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to say it would be possible to tutorialize any game mechanic without dialogue. Maybe you could have like an icon of a button with an arrow pointing at it.
Sure.
Say, press this now to do thing.
Uh-huh.
But I'm going to say you do not need dialogue to tutorialize.
Ooh, in a perfect world, I want to agree with you. Like that's in a perfect world, all tutorials would just be natural in the world. Right?
So that little tail in the corner of my head.
You would hope yeah. that you I mean, would I'm being just a be bit able
of
to a, do that.
I'm being hypocritical here. There's a lot of dialogue in my game, tutorializing stuff, but...
Is that just... Well, now I have a critter who wants to come in. All right. Hi. Okay.
Oh, boy. This is a great podcast for animal friends.
Yes.
Oh, look, it's a big fat pussy.
Is... Hi there, kitty. Yes, I will pet you and you can be on camera as well. Right. And so it's like writing a tutorial with dialogue and spelling it out like that is probably easier from your perspective.
Yeah. Because it's certainly... I guess it's hard to imagine people... every single person on Earth understanding a visual tutorial.
Mm.
I mean, there's a lot of imagery that isn't universal, I suppose.
Sure. Not like not just that, but the context. You like if you were to tutorialize something without any words, you would have to put up the exact context in the game. Like the simple example is the original Super Mario Brothers. They just give you something that you can't walk over, so you have to jump. They are tutorializing you to jump, right?
Well, let me like slightly adjust what I just said. You can tutorialize with dialogue, but the dialogue doesn't have to be like direct instructions.
Okay.
So yeah, you could have something like Portal 2, for example, where you got characters having funny dialogue with you the whole time,
mm-hmm.
and in many ways telling you what to do next, but it never comes across as like an obnoxious tutorial the way like Navi's dialogue does.
Sure, sure.
It feels more contextual, I suppose.
Well, and
like it's more in the universe.
Yes, you know, very simply done in the first Portal. I don't remember the tutorial section of Portal 2, unfortunately, but in the first Portal, you know, of course, that was all part of the tests that Shell was doing, right? Was basically the tutorial.
Yes, it was always a bit of a lurch when you played a Metal Gear Solid game. And play Metal Gear Solid, and it's like if you're in the torture scene in Metal Gear Solid, and Revolver Ocelot says, "Don't remember to press this button repeatedly to not succumb to the torture, and don't use auto fire," which was a bit of a lurch.
You know, it just took you out of it a little bit. It
takes you out of the universe of the game just for a second.
Hey, remember, you're still playing a video game. Hey, listen, yeah. You're still playing a video game. Hey, listen.
All right. Well, that's the issue with Navi specifically being annoying.
Okay.
Let's move down the list. Let's move on topic-wise. You've got Guilty Spark from Halo there.
Yes, the little AI companion once you get into the library of Halo.
See, my first thought was, for some reason, I thought of Peter Dinklage, but he voiced the character in Destiny who was like Guilty Spark.
Yeah.
But who you were stuck with for the whole game.
The other little floating robot computer thing.
Yes.
Yes. Well, and, you know, I only put him on the list because I just didn't like listening to him, you know, like I just thought he had a very annoying voice. He tells you what to do and is generally useless, and more so like Guilty Spark tries to be funny and fails.
Right. I've noticed there's a lot of that sort of thing in Bungie games. Mm-hmm. I noticed it more prominently in Destiny, but it's always like in Bungie games, they have the one character who's sort of the designated funny character. And everyone else is just ultra serious army person.
Mm.
And there's this one person's role is just to crowbar in a quip with their every single line of dialogue. Wasn't there a character in Destiny voiced by Nathan Fillion who had that quality?
In Destiny? No, well, there was a Nathan Fillion in Halo. But
I want to say there was a character voiced by Nathan Fillion in Destiny or someone who sounded a lot like him.
Listen, that's very, very possible.
Who had a similar role? It was just they were Captain Quip in the middle of serious dialogue. That was his job to say Quip.
I say funny thing now.
I think that's a failure of writing.
Yes,
characters should be more nuanced.
Hmm.
People should be capable of being funny when they're in the right mood.
Yes,
there shouldn't just be one funny person.
You shouldn't be clicking off the Quip quota, if you will.
Yeah.
Yes, checking the Quip quota. I agree with you, but then again, that goes back to your initial assessment, which is not properly filling the role that they need to be, right? And so if Nathan Fillion is always quipping all the time and you're in a serious moment, it takes you out of the game.
Yes.
And so you're not filling your purpose. Which is the same. I feel as taking you out of the world with the fire keeper or with Navi, and the same as just annoying you with sounds like Baby Mario.
All right.
Mm.
So we're closing in on the algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
Is what is the formula for a perfect non-annoying NPC? They have to make sense in context. Mm-hmm. They have to make sense in the context of the world. Mm-hmm. They have to be fulfilling an intended purpose.
Yes.
Right, that's where we are so far.
Yeah, and that all makes sense to me. Let's see here. Here's next on the list, I put Toad, the original Toad from the first Super Mario Brothers.
Now, that's an interesting case, because Toad doesn't appear much in that game. His sole job is to appear at the end of each world mm-hmm. and say the princess is in another castle. That's his job.
So the sole job of Toad is to say, you didn't do it. You didn't do it yet.
But, you know, that's fulfilling a purpose.
It is.
Someone has to break it to you. Why hate on the guy because he got landed the shitty job?
Why?
Sorry, Mario, you're not in this one either. I mean, this is kind of a failure of intelligence on everyone's part here. Maybe we should really try to work hard to figure out which castle he's in rather than doing this weird trial and error approach.
And I think if your character can be replaced by a sign or a note, then maybe your character doesn't need to exist, is I guess all I'm saying.
Does that make them annoying, though? It's more sort of in an abstract sense. You don't feel annoyed specifically at them. You're just generally annoyed.
I'm annoyed, and they are the deliverer of the annoyance, which is, wait a minute, I'm not done yet? Right?
Right.
I know they say don't blame the messenger, but the messenger gets a little flack here and there. Come on in, now you can come in too. Yes, all the animals come in.
Well, I tell you when he does get annoying is when they gave him a voice in later games. Oh, and it just sounded like someone screeching into a mic.
Hey! Hey there!
Yes.
Yes.
If Super Mario was one had been fully voiced, I agree, he probably would have been one of the most annoying characters in the world.
Sorry, Mario. Your princess is in another castle. Try again. Hey!
Oh, okay. That got Cookie's attention. Oh, my God. Now the animals are just running in and out of my office. Everyone needs pets.
But another thing that's annoying about Toad is that that's another case of being unable to escape. Like the dog from Duck Hunt who locks you into the sniggering animation.
Yeah,
there's no escape from the sequence. You're locked in to watch the Toad telling you the princess is in another castle. And you know it's coming, but there's nothing you can do. You can't impishly jump on his head like it's a Half-Life cutscene.
Right.
You can't skip ahead in the dialogue.
The dog, though, is like, you failed, idiot. And Toad is like, you succeeded, idiot. You know?
Yeah, I suppose.
Like, you saying, did
hey,
it.
You're doing a great job wasting everyone's fucking time, Mario.
You did. You beat the level. You went to the castle. You defeated Bowser, but you're not done yet, dummy.
Yeah, also, that wasn't Bowser, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess that was like one of Bowser's. I think the canon is that all the Bowsers you meet up to the final world are a fake Bowser.
Oh, is that?
Because if you kill them with projectiles, then they turn into like a standard enemy, like a Goomba, and then fall off the world.
Oh.
But in the case of the last Bowser, they don't do that. They just turn into Bowser as they fall off the world.
Oh, so he used some magic on some henchmen? Interesting.
Presumably. They did something similar in Super Mario Land on the Game Boy, where you find the princess at the end of each world. And then the princess turns into a standard monster and goes, psych, and runs off screen.
Okay, all right, I'll buy that.
Which was annoying, but in that case, intentionally so.
Right.
And a little bit creepy. Sort of Cronenberg-y body horror moment when the princess turns into a giant spider and jumps away.
Like, do you think like Bowser learned that spell so he could just, you know, have princess around? Like, you know, Minion Toad, you will be my princess tonight. Oh, boss, no!
Well, I wasn't thinking it until you brought that up, but now I will never stop thinking that.
Bowser is inherently creepy. He kidnaps women to try to force them to marry him. He does creepy stuff. I'm sorry.
You ever read Oglaf?
Mm-mm.
It's like a raunchy webcomic. And they like there was a, one of their strips, they covered this very topic. Where they depicted like a scene kind of like the scene from the start of Excalibur where Uther Pendragon says, disguise me as my enemy's wife so I can sleep with her because I fancy her.
Sure.
And the wizard's about to do it, and the king goes, oh, on second thoughts, just disguise yourself as her and I'll sleep with you. Which would probably have been the better solution.
Right? Right? And that's the kind of magic Bowser gets into. Come here, you're going to look like my lady.
Well, he's clearly like into tonight. Some weird stuff. Mm. I mean, his castle's full of chains and cages and lava.
Just putting that out there. Just putting that out there.
I guess he keeps all that lava around because he's been defeated so many times, he's just covered in like a shell that makes it difficult to feel. Mm. So he has to stick his cock and balls in boiling lava to get any kind of gratifying sensation.
Interesting. Interesting. I think let's go more into the lore of Bowser's kinks in another episode, though.
Okay. When we have a slightly civil war over the subject of which is the most kinky character in gaming.
Wouldn't it be
Bayonetta, yes, obviously.
I was going to say the fan-made Bowsette, right?
That's just part of the wonderful spectrum of kink that Bowser represents.
Exactly.
Are we far enough off topic yet? Has this train gone off a cliff yet?
Zoop. All right. We already talked a bit about Crestfallen Warrior from Dark Souls. He's there as an exposition.
Oh, we missed out Tingle.
Ooh, of course.
Tingle from the Zelda series, who is a character.
Yes.
You know, it's funny. I hesitate to say annoying. I might say a little bit creepy.
Eccentric,
but
sure.
If like someone's trying to put their hand up your dress, I guess that's annoying, but you'd also want to get the fuck away.
Sure.
It's not quite the same emotion that you feel towards Baby Mario or the dog from Duck Hunt.
Sure, there's just a better adjective to describe Tingle. Tingle's weird. Like I put Tingle in the same realm that I put like the who's the seed guy from Breath of the Wild? You know, you give all the Korok seeds to, and he does his little dance.
Yeah, that guy. I don't know his name. He's like the seed guy.
The seed guy. And so like Tingle's there where, you know, it's similar stuff that we've talked about before. It's like repetitive dialogue. You have to go through all these hoops just to like, listen, I just want
to. It's even worse in Majora's Mask because like time repeats itself every 3 days and you have to go through his dialogues again just to get the fucking maps of him.
Right, right. And you're like, yes,
you're
I know
familiar with
this
character. If you're not familiar with this character, by the way, perhaps we should summarize. Oh. He's a grown man in a skin-tight leotard.
Mm-hmm.
Who has a very suspect demeanor.
Yes.
I hesitate to say things like child toucher.
He has an admittedly like fascination. He has like a weird parasocial relationship with Link, aka the hero of whatever. And so he wants to dress like Link. He wants to be best friends with Link.
And he's obsessed with fairies.
Right, and it's just
he wants
like
to go away with the fairies, who will not judge him for looking up pictures of Princess Sally Acorn naked.
Just clear your browser history, Tingle.
He's almost a sort of archetypal creepy dude of Japanese culture.
Yes, yes, and like to me, what makes him annoying / creepy is his fascination with Link and his obsessive. Parasocial relationship.
He's almost fulfilling the role Amy Rose fills in the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise. The person who has unwanted love for the main character and who must be constantly fobbed off.
The fan.
I mean, I guess do you get a predatory vibe from Tingle?
I get the vibe, like, I don't get that vibe, but I do get the vibe that he would snap at any moment. Like, he has the ability just to snap and turn full psycho, yes.
I'm not sure he'd snap, but I get the feeling that if you're in a situation with him, things would escalate.
Yes.
Things would escalate, and somewhere you'd have to draw the line, and that's when he'd start getting nasty.
Yes, the classic, if you give a mouse a cookie, like, okay, like, yeah, fine, Tingle, we're friends. I just need these maps. Oh, we're friends now? And then he needs more and more and more. Yeah.
Is that, like, that's intentionally annoying though, right? This is intention.
I don't know if it's annoying or if it's comedy. And like, Tingle is, like, failed comedy. Because, you know, that's a cultural thing where I think he's in there for yucks.
So he's a Jar Jar Binks.
Yes. That's how I read it. I could be very wrong.
Okay, that's another facet of annoyance, I suppose. The failed comedy character. So you're almost intended to be annoyed by him, but you're supposed to laugh as well.
Right? Like, good-natured annoyance.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, like, that in itself is a whole different conversation about, like, you know.
He's like Dandelion in the Witcher series.
Yeah.
I mean, in that case, you're supposed to be annoyed the way Geralt is annoyed by him, but he's sort of lovable as well.
Yes, that's a really good example of a character who is annoying, but in a quirky and lovable way.
Yeah.
Probably
even more so in the TV show.
I think that's because, you know, going back to our earlier conversation about having a well-rounded character, Dandelion.
I mispronounced the official canon.
No, I think it's Dandelion. In the first Witcher audiobook, the guy who's reading it pronounces it Dandelion, and Was he from space? Yes, he might have been.
Was it the person reading from space for not knowing how to pronounce Dandelion?
Well, but in every book after that, he pronounces it Dandelion. But I much prefer Dandelion. I think that's much more fun.
I suppose it does sound more like a fantasy character's name than Dandelion.
Yes, and so
I am Dandelion of House Tulip.
I think officially in the books it was pronounced Dandelion until the games came around and made Dandelion much more popular.
Okay.
Is what I believe happened. I don't know. In any case, Dandelion is way more fun.
It's pretty annoying of a character to provoke endless discussion of how you're supposed to pronounce his name, I suppose.
The author's Polish. You know, it's a translation thing. The point is, that's a great example of someone who can pull off annoyance for comedy's sake.
Right.
And because
it helps if they don't have a high-pitched voice, like just Jar Jar Binks does.
Putting that out there. What helps is the well-roundedness of his characters. You understand why Dandelion does the things he does, what is motivating him. He is playing his annoyance to the top of his intelligence. Yes.
He is playing a fantasy setting bard in accordance with the Dungeons and Dragons tradition of what bards are like.
You know, super horny all the time.
they're the high charisma build.
Yes, exactly. And so it makes sense, whereas a Tingle.
Sorry, Toffee was just passing comments on the subject of Tingle there.
Whereas Tingle is just that. No, Toffee, thank you for making me wrap up so succinctly. Tingle is a... There's no going up from there, so we can move on.
Toffee, you're a natural on screen. The camera loves you, baby.
You were born for it, Toffee. We can move on to the adoptable kids from Skyrim.
I never played much Skyrim, so perhaps you would fill me in on some context here.
In the first big town you go to, Whiterun, that's like the big city, the first big city that you go to, children NPCs will stop you and like beg you for cash. And if you give them some cash, there are some in-game benefits where you get, I want to say you get better barter, you get better prices in the shops for like an in-game hour because of your charity.
Yeah, that's a character we could have added to the list. The beggars from Assassin's Creed.
Ooh, there you go. Well, the children are probably very similar, but after you give them like one coin, they will always ask you to be like, can you be my parent? Can you be my parent? I'll come and live with you. And it's like, I just gave you a gold shilling, girl. Yeah. Yeah.
See, that's the general problem with Skyrim and a lot of Bethesda games. Characters just don't act like human beings. Like when you, isn't it the case when you join like any faction in that game is like, you completed 3 missions. You can now be our king. You can now be the head of the Thieves Guild.
Right.
There's literally no one else we are considering for the role.
Exactly. And the children fall along the same line where, get that cord.
Carry on.
The children fall along the same line where, like, the game wants you to know that you can have a family and do this role-playing thing. But instead of unveiling it naturally, it's just like, you can adopt me. I can live with you. Adopt me. Let me live with you.
Yeah. I guess it's annoying when they come across as needy.
Mm-hmm.
Something like Stardew Valley, forming a relationship with someone and marrying them doesn't feel annoying because, you know, it's a fairly long process. You have to put some work into it.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you can seduce pretty much any character in the Fable games.
Right.
But there was no real reason to. It was just when they spoke to you, it was like, would you like to become my friend? Please become my friend. You want to be my friend? Well, give me presents. Give me presents and then you will be my friend. That's how it works.
It's kind of how it works. Maybe that's a factor here. Like when we're talking about like making it natural, I think one of the things that makes a story element so natural is time, is like letting elements sit and stew. And instead of just, you know, pressing 2 buttons and being able to adopt a kid, putting in the work required to do that, you know?
Mm. There's almost an element of condescension, I suppose.
Hmm.
It was like, hey, do you want to adopt a kid? You can do it right now. It's easy. It's easy enough for you, stupid pillocks, playing the game.
Just grab a kid and they'll be in your house. That's how the game works. Just grab children. Yeah, maybe that's it. Or maybe like it's condescending in a different way where it's an underdeveloped
It's a little condescending to think we might get attached to them in like the time it takes to give them 1 coin. Attached enough to want to put them in your house.
Right.
It's like sort of points to a writer or developer not really understanding how human emotions work. We have just met and I love you.
It's either that or they had these grand ideas for this gameplay mechanic where you can have a family and it has certain in-game benefits, but, you know, they had to ship the game, so they just scrapped all of that and gave you 2 button prompts, in which case it's a game mechanic that is not developed correctly, and that's condescending on a different side of the coin.
You know, just to move this podcast in a sort of wrapping up sort of direction. I think with this whole conversation, I've realized that the best way to make an NPC character not annoying is just to write them well.
Ooh, well, that's
basically the essence of it. Just make them seem like a real person and write them well.
And that's something that you are currently dealing with in Starstruck Vagabond, the game that you are currently developing.
Yes. I want to have NPCs who can join your crew.
Right. And so what sort of, and obviously like you are a, you know, I don't know if we can call you prolific, but you have written many things in your life. What the definition for prolific is. So
I've written a lot. Well, it just means someone who writes a lot. Yes, I am prolific.
Okay, all right. Then we can call you you are a prolific author. You have a ton of experience writing well-rounded characters, in my opinion. What are you bringing to your NPCs in your game to help make them feel real? Like, for example, is there a backstory in your head that you might not write down on the page and just say, oh, this is how this person would act?
Well, I suppose the key points I work out before I worked anything out, because a lot of things like backstory can get worked out in the process of writing. character scenes. We're just putting them in situations. What I try to work out just initially is what their strengths are as a character, what qualifies them to be an agent in the plot, and what their major flaws are as well, what gets in the way of them achieving their goals.
Okay.
And I think that's the most important thing for me, is that they have some kind of flaw that they have to overcome.
Sure.
If there is a process of the character. They're not just there. Like some of the characters it might come across as annoying, but in the end, I would hope you would see the line on the graph, the process they've gone through to become a developed character. Mm. Like the characters in Spiritfarer. Mm-hmm. I mean, on paper, a lot of those can seem annoying. They take up space on your boat and demand you give them presents and build stuff and feed them. But at the end, when you take them to the Evador at the end of their arc, almost all of them, that's when you start to realize who they are as people.
Sure.
And realize where they were coming from with all their annoying habits.
I think that's a really important... It's a really important statement to say, like, your character needs a flaw. And, you know, there's a lot of debate on what a flaw is. I think you and I have mentioned many, many times that, you know, Lara Croft's character flaw in the new games is a little suspect. I'm trying to remember. Or not Lara Croft, Nathan Drake. His flaw is that he quips too much, right? Like, that doesn't count as a flaw.
Yeah. A flaw is something that should get in the way of the character's goal.
Yes.
That's the essence of a character is their goal. And if their flaw doesn't get in the way of that goal, then it's not a flaw.
Yes. And so... Like
being very determined is not a flaw. Being really angry and violent is not a flaw if your goal is to kill a bunch of stuff.
Right. No, but I think like that's a really important thing. And right now I'm thinking about this a lot because I'm gearing up a new Dungeons & Dragons campaign with a bunch of people who have not played before because I need to create more friends who play so I can play more. And we've been dealing with a lot of that on the role-playing side of things, which is like, your character, like what's driving you to do this? Do you want to go on an adventure for money, for fame, to help people, you know, for vengeance? Like, why do you want to do it? And you also need a flaw so that we can play with that in a role-playing sense. Are you jealous? Are you so money hungry that you're greedy? You know, these sort of
but
things.
But does that get in the way of their goal? Being money hungry can be useful for a goal if your goal is to have a lot of money.
If your greed means you make reckless decisions, it can be, because if you make reckless decisions, that can get you killed or make you lose gold.
So their flaw is recklessness, not greed.
Ooh, I like it.
There you go.
Sure. I suppose that was me putting the cart before the horse.
I'm probably projecting a certain image, I've just realized, sitting here on my comfy couch in a dressing gown with a little chihuahua on my lap, in this relaxed pose.
Mm-hmm.
It's just occurred to me. Maybe people will have trouble relating with me in these troubled times. Would it help if I said it's a little bit cold in this office?
I think what you are doing is projecting the things we all want. We would all like to just be sitting on a comfy couch in a robe with some sort of fuzzy thing to pet. And so you're living your best life.
Perhaps I should be checking my privileges.
Perhaps you should always do that, but you should also live your best life.
Do you agree, Toffee?
Toffee is really happy about your robe and couch. I'll say that.
Toffee seems on board.
All right. Well, then that seems like a great place to wrap things up. NPCs, some good, some bad.
Yeah. So how you make the one to the other is a matter for your... I don't know.
That's fair.
Make good ones, not bad ones. and maybe our advice will help.
Maybe. And if you're just listening to this podcast, this discussion was inspired by our Slightly Civil War episode debating which is the more annoying NPC, the dog from Duck Hunt, or the baby Mario from Yoshi's Island. You can watch that over on escapistmagazine.com, where you can become an Escapist Plus member, which gives you all sorts of benefits. I know I just recently filmed my Ask the Creators segment.
Oh, shit. I need to do that today.
You do need to do that, where you can ask us creators specific questions, and we will just talk about that for a long, long time. Thanks to Omar for editing that down.
All right. And yeah. Remember to follow us all on Twitter. I'm at Yahtzee Croshaw.
I'm at Harlack.
You can follow The Escapist on at Escapist Magazine.
Mm-hmm. And
Toffee doesn't have a Twitter yet.
Oh, and thanks for listening. We'll slightly see you later.
Fuck you.
Toffee, your language.